once I did focus on sales, we had a record sales month, like so much so it almost was a record year just in that month.
Wow.
Just by doing that for 2 hours a day, that was it. So that showed me the power of focus.
It's one small step for man.
Liftoff.
We have a
liftoff. We choose to go to the moon, not because they are easy, but because they are
hard. I have a dream.
You can't handle the truth.
7.
6.
5.
4.
3.
2.
1.
Super, 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 super.
Super You.
Welcome back to the Super You Podcast. I'm Jake from Equal Man. Eric was recently featured on the Nothing Sacred podcast, so we're sharing that interview with you today. Enjoy.
The leaders that have had the most transparency over time, they're the ones that you remember.
In times like these, adverse economic times, employees don't want to hear happy talk.
Work every day like somebody's trying to take it from you, because they are.
Hi, guys. Welcome to Nothing Sacred, our podcast hosted by Recruitability. I'm Nat Elias here with my co-host, Nick Shank. Nick, how's it going today?
What's up, Nat? Looking forward to this one.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. We've got a good friend, Eric Qualman, Equalman, EQ. We're going to be calling him one of those three throughout this podcast. How's it going, Eric?
It's going well. As long as it's just those three, you call me, that'll be a good day.
That's right. That's right. We're gonna revert from name calling other than those three. Equalman has performed in more than 55 countries and reached 50 million people with this message. In 2012, he was named one of the world's 6 most likable authors. Qualman was an academic All Big Ten in basketball at Michigan State University, go Spartans, and has previously been honored as Alum of the Year. A scholarship bears his name at MSU. His MBA is from the University of Texas, go Horns. And he is a former sitting professor at MIT and Harvard's EDX. He received an honorary doctorate for his groundbreaking work. Most importantly, Qualman is still trying to live up to the world's greatest dad coffee mug he received from his wife and 2 daughters. Something I know quite a bit about.
Mugs. I have 2 daughters. I don't have one of those mugs.
I've got a daughter and a son and 2 mugs. Yeah. So you have to live up to it twice as much.
That's twice as much. That's right. You can't drink out of it because it's nail polish that's never dried.
That's right. you know, Eric, it's great to have you on this this podcast. We created Nothing Sacred to really focus on the habits of work. What's changed from our parents, in my case, the baby boomer generation, how they worked, what were habits in their everyday life, and what we see today, and this is, of course, even pre-COVID, and what we're going to see after COVID, and what are the habits that change and the trends that are bucked in work that will never be the same. So we're bringing light to a lot of that, things like the 4-day work week, which you hear about. Tim Ferriss actually takes the 4-hour work week, right?
Yeah, 4.5-hour work. Yeah, 4.5.
Is it 4.5?
Yeah.
It's 4.5.
I think maybe it's 4-hour.
Close
one
enough.
And a half. Fellow Austinite Tim Ferriss probably cringing right now.
That's right. That's right. He's like
four and a half.
He's like, damn it, Equalman, it's 4.5. It's 4.5, not 4.
I think it's 4-hour work week. Yeah, I can see the picture of the hammock.
It is. It's 4-hour work week. Yeah, four-hour work week.
I did a half more.
That's right. That's right. You always got to do more than what it says. Eric, how's life going with you through all this? I mean, you speak and train all over the world. So that must have been a shock to the system when all this happened.
Yeah, I mean, we're really fortunate. There's a lot of people a lot worse off than we are, but you're exactly right. Come March, so I was on pace to fly 200,000 miles, and that's usually in and out because I have the kids at home. That mug, you know, you got to live up to the mug. And so I have a 52-night rule that I won't be away for more than 52 nights a year from the kids. So what that means is I once was in India for 5 hours to speak for 5 hours at Google. And then flew immediately back. And so anyways, long story longer, come March, all that activity goes to zero. And so immediately your business, live speaking on stage to zero. And so the beautiful thing is what I speak on stage is primarily around digital leadership and focus. And so it allowed us to have to innovate. So it's something that we are better prepared than most to do. And we're doing virtual before because we have animation studios, virtual keynotes. And so fortunately we are poised for it. Obviously, we'd love for live events to come back. I miss people. I miss book signings. But yeah, I went to zero, and it's been a learning experience. And like they say is that, hey, don't waste the pandemic, right? Because this is where innovation happens. And so we've been able to do some stuff. I know a lot of your listeners are doing stuff. I know you guys are doing some innovation. And so it's really just been forced upon us. I talk about digital leadership that you're kind of in your car and we're talking about transformations 3 or 5 years out. Here's this wall of transformation. And all of a sudden overnight, bam, it moves it forward 3 to 5 years. So now we're there. It moved everything forward 3 to 5 years.
And there's generationally defining events, right? For me, 9/11 was one of them. But innovation happens during that time. And for our parents, they lived through different times that when they came out of it, again, there were trends and habits that will never exist, didn't exist before, that'll be there going forward.
Was there a moment or a day in March that you remember where kind of the magnitude of the situation hit you?
I think when our spring break was canceled with the kids, I go, this might not come back as quick as I think. when it first happened, I was actually exhausted from January and February, and our March was lighter than normal, even though March is generally a super busy time of year for speaking. And so we go, wow, we got lucky on that one. Once March is through, we'll be back on stage in April. But once it was canceled spring break, then it kind of hit, okay, I'll be back on stage in September. And then all of a sudden you start going more into this. You go, ooh, I might not be on stage again in 2021. So that's what we're looking at. But obviously there's some live sport events that are pulling things off. So we're always rooting for the NFL, Big Ten now, just trying to make sure that all that happens. So we're just playing it by ear. I heard something from someone smarter than I am just say, plan for everything, predict nothing. So basically you control what you can control. And that's what we're doing.
We were, and as a sidebar, Eric and I's daughters are really close friends and are both in the third grade together. And we were actually, I think you were picking up your daughter at our house, you and your wife, and we sat around and had some drinks. And this was in March. And we were talking because at the time, you hadn't had a lot of events get canceled yet, right? It kind of hit really quickly, right?
Correct. Yeah, it was just, we haven't had anything canceled. Maybe this one will cancel.
Yeah, and this was in March when it happened, like, and you know, kind of when South By gets canceled, then everything kind of sort of fall in suit.
Yeah.
And remember, you and I were talking the same thing. He's like, what are you investing in right now? Like trying to figure out, hey, what's the stock market doing now? What are some good investments to be looking at? But we were leaving the next week for our spring break, which We went to Breckenridge and we're in Breckenridge for less than 48 hours. We landed, we got our lift tickets, we rented our equipment, and then they closed the mountain.
That's right. I remember you guys flew out. We were supposed to fly out the next day, and we were lucky because then they said, "Nope, they're gonna be sending you back."
Yeah.
We got lucky by a day. Another event was when March Madness got canceled. Obviously, I played basketball in college, and so when that was canceled, and the amount of money that is lost around that event, I go, this is real.
Yep.
But yeah, I remember that conversation. It's crazy. We just thought, a lot of us thought it was just going to blow through. And now we're in it, and hopefully it's trending the right direction. We'll see. You know, just plan for everything, predict nothing.
Well, and it might have been a couple days before we were at dinner. And I love this story because there was so much, not to make light of the situation, but at the time in March, we don't know what we know now. And there was so much COVID going on in this restaurant. By the time we left it, it was somewhat comical to us not knowing what we know now. But we had gotten to dinner again with our wives probably about 7:30, and we had a really good time and we were hanging out. And about 10:30, the place started filling up, and our table became a bottle service table, right? And before we knew it, there was a DJ, and I mean, elbow to elbow. Like, my wife went into the bathroom and she said, there are girls talking about which guys they're going to kiss. And I'm like, this is amazing. And Eric comes back. He's like, yeah, these people don't care about COVID. I mean, you might have walked to the restroom, but you walked through all the people.
I think I was starting about to maybe go through the people. And I go, you know, I'm just going to hold it because we're going to leave soon. And I go, I don't know. It's COVID. I mean, it's we know a lot more today, but at the time we just didn't know. So just like, well, I'm just gonna play it safe. I'm not walking through that mosh pit.
Yeah. Exactly. And then obviously then and within weeks, right? Then South By, then March Madness and all those things happen. So but speaking of sports, you're a sports nut, big Michigan State guy. Texas fan too, because you're
got the Heisman Trophy winner on the team this
year. That's right. Hopefully,
from Westlake High School.
You know, hopefully we make it through the season. But if we do, I feel good about it. Yeah. But what's your take on sports and how sports has pivoted? And we don't know what's going to happen with college basketball yet, and how they're working out protocols. But you know, these teams and different sports, they're figuring it out.
Yeah, it's amazing to me they can figure this out. So hopefully, fingers crossed, they continue down the line. Some sports easier than others when you think about golf or tennis. But yeah, some of these big sports, especially the NFL, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But so far, so good.
I thought it was interesting. Tom Brady called it a scrimmage atmosphere when he was playing at the Saints this past weekend. And, you know, it is. It's just dead quiet. You hear some crowd noise. I think the broadcasters pipe in. But it's bizarre. I mean, I still enjoy watching it, but the emotion is eliminated a little bit. I mean, I watched the Broncos Titans game Monday Night Football, and Mile High is just known to have that energy, and it's just like kind of even watching it on TV, you're just like,
yeah. Except they're pumping in music, they're pumping in sound though. You can hear the ambient noise.
The quarterback from the Broncos is like, I spoke in a hushed tone in the huddle because I didn't want the defense.
Oh, true.
To hear the call.
Yeah. NBA, I think, has done a great job. I love what they're doing with the technology. As a basketball guy, I love playing and watching the sport. It's cool to see the different angles that they're using and how they're getting creative with how they're covering it. It's been pretty neat to watch. So
they had to kick a virtual fan out of the game recently. Like, virtual fans were zooming in to appear on the board. And I think somebody was, like, flashing some sign. They had to, like, remove the person. So that's became like a noteworthy event.
That's too funny. Hey, I want to talk a bit about the book. Ask you some questions on that, and just you know, it really struck a chord with me as a self-proclaimed workaholic. Your concept of staying focused and, in many ways, doing less and just doing less better. It really resonated with me. I find myself looking for ways to stay busy. And I'm interested in some of the research and just your idea behind the project and how the concept came to be practiced for you, because it's something that I could certainly use a lot of help with.
Yeah, for me, it was something I was wrestling with, and the book's not for the downtrodden. It's not for a person that's not an A personality. It's actually for that person, the person that's excelling, but they're hitting triples, but they know there's home runs, there's grand slams out there. And then at the end of the day, they might not feel as fulfilled as maybe they should at what society would deem success. I'd get excited when I would think about, what if I just focused on sales for this month? What if I just focused on writing for this month? Instead of trying to juggle all these things at once, what would that look like? So that was the spark, and I kind of get excited about it for a year. And then since it was on my brain, I started asking in the green room, because live events were happening. And so in the green room, that's before you go on stage, you're really lucky to sit with some top thought leaders, other speakers that are there. It might be a Malcolm Gladwell that you can have a conversation with. It might be some astronaut like Mark Kelly that just got off the space shuttle. But what fascinates me most is the leaders of these companies. So they have 20,000 employees. So I'd ask them, like, how do you manage all these 20,000 people and how are you so successful? And they'd say, focus. I go, all right, now what's the biggest challenge? And they go, staying focused. Like, I'm a little bit more focused than most people, but my biggest challenge is staying focused, not being overwhelmed by the sea of opportunity. So the more people I asked, whether it's a school teacher, whether it's a stay-at-home dad, whether it was a CEO or a small business, they all had the same issue that I was wrestling with, was focus. And so I go, well, why don't I take on a project and take the street research, or the research, the scientific research, essentialism, stoicism, like, this will work. If you eat this, this helps. If you sleep this way, it helps. And then marry it up with me being the guinea pig. So that's why it's called The Project. So take the street science, my kind of firsthand approach, and marry it with that institutional science. And then each month, just kind of give myself a grade, like a kindergartner, like A, B, C, D. And what I learned is that focus is really, really hard. So I only got 2 A's out of 12 months, but focus can be learned. It can become a habit.
Which ones did you get A's on?
The first month, because otherwise the project would have
focus
been folded.
Focus on growth. Yeah,
so
yeah.
The focus on growth, which for a lot of people that might be sales, but I call it growth because it depends on what you're doing.
Sure.
Your growth might be raising money for a charity. But what could you not let the ball drop? And so to allow you to do a project. And keep in mind, I looked at it and I said, what could the average person dedicate per day? And I said, they could probably dedicate 30 minutes to 2 hours a day to focus on something specific. Probably 30 minutes. And so that was what the goal was. But for the first month, it was sales. And I failed 5 times the first starting the project. Like for a year, I kept going, okay, this is the month. We're going to focus on sales for this month. Oh, yeah. We're focused on sales this month. And I go, wait, I'm supposed to dedicate 2 hours a day. And then the whole month, I dedicated 17 minutes for the whole month because I'd let the immediate take over the important. But long story longer, once I did focus on sales, we had a record sales month. Like so much so, it almost was a record year just in that month.
Wow.
Just by doing that for 2 hours a day. That was it. So that showed me the power of focus. It also allowed me to write the rest of the book because I go, okay, now that I've got kind of the table stakes in place, now we can go each month by month with something different. It was fun to do, and the learnings were great. It's a reference that I'm going to use when I start to lose it because you still start to lose. The gravitational pull is to kind of not focus. It's to go to the immediate rather than the important.
I think that a lot of people have issues with focusing because of the long list of things they have to say no to focus on the one thing that they need to get done.
You said it right there. It's about saying no. And so the things that some of the top learnings was A, focus is hard, but focus can become a habit. B, people that are super successful, they're not more talented or smarter than us. They have the ability to say no. And how do they say no? They have systems and processes in place. They don't rely on willpower. So it's a system or a process that's in place that helps them say no. So today, through this learning, I'm much better at saying no because most of us are people pleasers because it actually does benefit you to be a people pleaser going back thousands of years, you know, tribes assimilating with the tribe. But now today, if someone asks a request, if it's not an emphatic yes, then it's an emphatic no. And so that's what most of the top performers have understood and they embrace.
I highlighted that quote in the book, right? The difference between successful people and barely successful people is that very successful people say no to almost everything. And it's fascinating to me because I'm a yes man. I mean, I'll say yes to anything and everything. And actually, there's a movie about that called Yes Man, right? I don't know if you ever saw it, right?
I gotta see that.
No, you should. It's Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey.
It's Jim Carrey. And he has to say yes to, he gets hit with whatever, right? And he has to say yes to everything. And he realizes, it's actually contradicts your book, he realizes how much progress he can make by just saying yes. So it's like, hey, take this yoga class. Right. Yes. And he keeps saying yes to everything.
That's a good point because the other learning is that the opposite of a known truth is often true. Meaning what you just said is if you say yes to everything. But we did it in a context of with my family.
Yeah.
I was saying no to them, my kids, because you always think that they're going to be there. You take them for granted.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to play cards? Can we do this game, Daddy? No, because you're trying to do something for work.
Yeah.
Try to focus. And then so for 1 month, just for comedic value even, I just said yes to everything. Hey, can we have candy cane waffles? Yes. We can't have them every day. But today, you can have candy cane waffles for breakfast. And so I do suggest everyone do that with your kids for a month. Just say yes to everything. Just to see their astonished look on their face is priceless.
Because they're asking, expecting the no.
You're
going to hit them with a yes.
Yep.
That's a good point.
Yeah. But that's training you, too, to just say yes to the right people.
Yeah.
Yeah. In your family.
Actually, I'm going to drive home today. I'm going to stop at Walgreens. I'm going to buy a bunch of shaving cream, and I'm going to play with my daughters with the shaving cream because they've been asking me about that.
And you've been saying no.
And I was saying, but I'll do it. You know, that's a good point. That's a great point.
And it really puts the concept of focus, into light. You reference this in your book, but Jay Papasan's The One Thing. We have with our staff, we have one time, right, where they're just their focus time. And it's in the morning from 9:30 to 11:30. And we ask in the morning in our huddle, what's the one thing you have to do today? And I grabbed a lot of that from his book.
Mm-hmm.
And we put it into our organization because I have trouble focusing. And so if it helps me out, I assume it's going to help our team out. And at the end of the day, they report on, did they complete that one thing? Mm-hmm. All I want to know in the day is, did you finish the one thing you said you were going to do for that day? Mm-hmm. And that concept came, actually, I heard Gary Keller speak, but he was referencing the book when he talked about that, and it really resonated with me. But that's it's a very similar sort of concept to, you know, hey, say no to everything else, just what you plan to focus on for that day.
Yeah, yeah. No, for sure. If you don't know that book, it's The One Thing by Jay Papasan and Gary Keller.
Yeah.
I sat down with Jay a couple times as we led into this book, just to pick his brain. But you're exactly right. Is one of the learnings is writing down what's the one thing I need to do that makes everything else either easier or unnecessary. It sounds so simple, but literally I'm in the middle of writing the focus project. And I'd write that one thing down. I go, that's going to take me 20 to 30 minutes to do that. And at the end of the day, I wouldn't get it done. And here I am in the middle of writing a book on focus. And so that's how hard it is. And so that's why it's about getting those systems over time, repetition, repetition, to get that habit.
Yeah, the thing I find myself struggling with sometimes is, you know, there could be one main thing I need to focus on, but it's going to take maybe a day or two to get through it. And mentally, I love the feeling. Everyone loves the feeling of crossing things off a list.
Yeah.
So if you have 10 things that don't take very long, you can cross off a list, or you leave those things and focus on the one thing that takes longer. I think like human nature is to like focus on the things you can cross off easier. And so it's a constant struggle of like, okay, I could put those 10 things off, even though I can't cross them off, I need to focus on this big thing. So I imagine quite a few people are like that.
Do you know why you want to cross off the list? Do you know why biologically you want to cross that off?
Just a feeling of accomplishment?
Yeah, it actually gives you a dopamine hit when you do that. Now, in the digital era, that's tricky because now the dopamine hit comes from you taking your email from 100 down to zero. So it's actually a drug that makes you feel good. And it can be a problem because it's highly addictive. So this is dopamine's what you get when you gamble and you win. It's when you're an alcoholic. And so when you think about that email, it's that quick win. And so you mentioned something too about the morning. So your staff gets together the huddle. So that's another key learning that we had, or I had during the project. And I'll ask you this question. All of us are either a robin, an eagle, or an owl. And so robin, eagle, or an owl. And so if you had nothing to do on Saturday, I know it's going to be tough to kind of visualize, but you have nothing planned for Saturday, a little easier in COVID. In pandemic, but you have nothing. There's no game you have to go to with your kids. Like, there's no alarm set. What time would you guys naturally wake up?
Probably 9:30.
7:30.
Okay, so 7:30. You're both eagles. You're close to a night owl. So if you're 10 a.m. or higher, you're a night owl. Most people are eagles. They're 7 to 10. Anything before 7, you're a robin. But the reason that's important is because you guys have your meeting in the morning to do that. An hour after you naturally would get up is your power hour. So all of us have brain drain. Just like your phone, you got to plug it in. Your phone gets drained during the day. Your brain, same things happen, especially as decisions come. That's why Steve Jobs, Zuckerberg, I generally wear a gray t-shirt. I don't think about it. It's one less decision. I eat the same thing for breakfast for the entire year.
Saw that, the Focus Project.
But it's really about that power hour. And so all the listeners out there, it's understand what your power hour is and make sure an hour after you naturally get up, don't answer those emails during that power hour. You got to do that one thing, like in your huddle. What's going to take the most brain power? What's that creative task? What's the one thing that's going to matter? And so don't save it toward the end of the day because then your brain's going to be kaput. It's like, do it during that power hour.
Yeah, yeah. Now, my wife's a fashion consultant, and I've simplified my wardrobe as well, much to her chagrin when I wear nothing but V-neck t-shirts and jeans. I vary the tennis shoes. That's my thing. I keep different types of tennis shoes.
There are some silver linings with the pandemic. That's one of them. I think that fashion, that's going to stick. Like, I don't think people are going to be wearing, not that they were wearing suits before, but I think that the casualness is even going further.
Yeah. Yep. Well, it's the comfort level of just being, you know, who you are. And you know, I can speak for her. Some of the work that she has had has been, hey, help me clean out our closet.
Yeah.
How do we simplify, you know, our wardrobe? And you know, I think a lot of that is something that's changed as a result of COVID.
My wife turned that into a business. So she took all the stuff in her closet she wasn't going to wear anymore and started this Poshmark account, marked up the prices, and now she's selling her clothing that she was just going to give away before. So
there you go.
Entrepreneurial.
That's right. That's right. Speaking of the workplace habits, you know, there's a lot that have been necessary because of COVID. You know, we can talk pre-COVID, post-COVID, but what are work habits that you think will be forever changed? You know, I think in our podcast, even pre-COVID, we talked about 4-hour work weeks, 6-hour days. I imagine much of that has to do with focus, mm-hmm. right? Hey, if you can get that focus,
right.
you don't need an 8-hour day.
Yeah.
Right? What do you think? What are some work habits that you're predicting might change?
I mean, touchless, that's just more of a physical thing.
Yeah.
I was just with the National Parking Association. So all the people own all the parking lots. So they've gone down to 90%, like 90% drop in revenue. So they've had to get innovative. And so what do? Is that now they have these dark kitchens. Dark kitchen is just a name for you need to order food. There's not like a physical restaurant you can go to. It's just this dark kitchen makes. They need a better branding because it sounds like it's like a seedy place. But it's just like a kitchen that produces food that then is curbside or delivery only. There's never has been an interior that you could go into. So there's stuff like that. They've converted the drive-in theaters. So there's a lot of innovation that's happening. I do think, so touchless is a big one that's going to come out of this. I think obviously you can see with bandwidth. So just broadband. Yeah. So broadband, it's like pre-broadband, post-broadband. Now we're living in like this super fiber era. It's forced Google, Comcast, all these networks to get more robust. And so it allows working from home to be more of a possibility. That being said, the big debate that I have, we don't know the answer because I always debate back and forth because I've been at consultant and also within companies where they test. I was at one company that's huge and they have mainly young 30-year-olds or young 20 to 30-year-olds that work there. And so they go, all right. And the owner of the company, I mean, it's huge. It's a huge privately held company. He's not a big fan of working from home. So he goes, well, here's what we're going to do. Everyone's telling me about, I got work from home. All right. If the sales team can achieve their number, then we're going to let them take Friday off. They can take Friday off. Sales team's going to take Friday off. Just Friday. Off meaning that they're working from home. And
there's a difference.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, they're working from home. So on Friday, sales team's going to all work from home. And if the sales team can beat their number for the quarter or match it, then everybody now can work from home on Fridays. Twice it didn't work. Now, the question is, it seems to be working during the pandemic. Now, is that because there's nothing else to do? So that's one argument. Or is it because we've gotten used to it and the broadband's better? Then third is, you've got this big debate, is that you can't have all Tom Brady's on your team. If your football team is all Tom Brady's, that'd be a terrible team. But a Tom Brady can get their work done whenever. You tell them, here's what you need to get done, they're going to get it done. But every team, this is controversial, but there's people on the team that have to physically be somewhere, otherwise they're not going to excel. And so you could argue, is that on them or is that on the organization to make sure? And then you have the big debate, why does that person get to work remote?
Totally.
Whereas this person doesn't. So, and you guys are in the space, so I'd love to hear your thoughts, but it's a big, big talking point right now to see what comes out of this.
That's that company with the sales team performing and everybody else gets to take off. It reminds me of playing basketball as a kid. If you missed free throws, everybody else had to do push-ups, right?
Yeah.
You take your shots, but if you miss, everybody else takes the free throws. Everybody else takes the push-ups.
Yeah. At the Houston Texans, when I was working there in digital marketing, the corporate sales team hit their sponsorship number, and they all got to go on a vacation to Pebble Beach. And I'm sitting here thinking, everyone else in this organization supported corporate sales hitting that goal. Yeah. And like, well, we're getting like table scraps here. What's up with that? So like, I think if you have a separate set of rules for one department versus the others, it kind of creates division.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of the things that we've seen, you know, you were talking about big companies and small companies, how they look at the work environments. Just in the last 90 days, Google, IBM, Facebook, they're buying up real estate in major markets, New York, the Bay Area, Dallas. My prediction is that working from home isn't going as well now that they have these data sets and they're measuring production. These big companies are, mm-hmm. right? Because they have large data sets. They're realizing, okay, it's the cool thing, but it actually doesn't work as well, right? And so I think there's going to be a gravitation back into the office, probably not to the extent or the way it was before. right? What I see happening, which is, you know, right now we live in Austin and traffic is great.
It's great.
You know, just being able to drive. Driving to the office now is amazing. Do I ever want to go back to a 1 hour commute? No. Right. So maybe those change, right? Maybe you start seeing the flex scheduling more. They're like, okay, I'm going to work, you know, 7 to 4, right? And just not have to sit in the traffic.
Right.
I think that's one thing we'll see shifting, but I do see a return to work, just how it, I see it more balanced.
Yeah.
And to your point with focus, we talked to a lot of organizations that run results-based organizations, right? How much accountability do you have? It's easier in sales, right? That's why they have these awards and these penalties in sales, because it's easier to measure accountability. It's not as easy at a dev shop or for an analyst, right? So how do they create those metrics for every type of function, right? If you can create those metrics and you say, hey, look, do this today, accomplish this, and you can be done with your day, that's sales, right? Sales, if you hit your number, we don't care what you do the rest of the day. We don't care what you do the rest of the week. How can we create those metrics for other professions? And I think we're going to see more of that, because that creates results-based environment that in many ways is built on focus, right?
The tough thing with sales in other departments is, let's say marketing, you could have a traffic goal for someone who's in marketing, but a lot of people, a lot of factors contribute to hitting that goal or not. In sales, I think it's easier to draw a direct line between someone's individual efforts and closing a deal. That line's a little blurrier in maybe other functions, marketing, for instance. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just a little squishier, so it's tougher, but I get your point. And you know, I've heard of organizations like that. You know, you hit your goal for the quarter, like, I'm not going to sweat you.
Yeah. Yep. And then the 4-day work week, right? That's something that was being discussed pre-COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's funny. It's either a 4-day work week or 5 days with 1 day work from home. I mean, let's be clear. I get that. Those are different things.
Those just tested it out, right? That they were testing it out before COVID. It was just like, hey. Yeah.
Was it Basecamp? Basecamp, I think, went to a 4-day work week. They're already in a virtual environment. And then they added to that a 4-day work week. And this was all pre-COVID. And there have been studies that show more production, you know, in a 4-day, because you're accomplishing more in a shorter period of time.
Right.
Right. Which is, again, going back to focus.
And then to my wife and I was joking, we want people to go back to the office, because we were already kind of, we'd go in 3 days a week, but now our adjustment will probably be 2 days a week with the team. And we're seeing that with other companies is that it'll change the way, if it's everyone comes in on Monday and Thursday, then when everyone's in Monday and Thursday, everyone knows you're only in, so it's all going to be collaboration work. Mm-hmm. But we're sitting there going, because you used to have the golf course to yourself. Now, if you look at the data, golf's through the roof.
Totally.
And so it's like, I want everyone to go back. Selfishly, I want everyone to go back, because it used to be you just have the whole streets to yourself and everything to yourself. But I think there'll be more of a hybrid approach, and it'll adjust what you do when you're in the office.
Yep. We've seen that since we went back Monday, Wednesday, totally voluntary. The office is open. We've got all the safety measures. You want to be here, you can be here. If you're not comfortable there, you don't want to, you don't have to. What I found, and this is based only on Recruitability's internal employee research, the millennials, they're not coming in. The people that are coming in are the ones with kids.
They're like,
I mean, as soon as we did it, right? Everybody in our office that has kids, they could not wait to go back. They're like, oh, honey, I got to go back to the office. It's mandatory, which it's clearly not. And then the millennials were like, oh, I got a one-bedroom flat. I got my computer now, and I got to, you know, this is great. They figure, they're like, this, I don't want to go back. And they don't have anything in their house but themselves and, you know, a cat or a dog running around.
Yeah, right. That's a good point.
And so we've seen that.
Yeah.
Still to this day, like, I have one of our recruiters, she has yet to come into the office.
Yeah.
And she also travels every weekend, right? She's the one we can
meet. She's maximizing this time.
Totally. And then, she's traveling all over the place.
And then I think people are getting more real about it, too. I always used to, some of my employees would always be like, our team would be like, what? I'd be going, today's, we're working remote, so it's a gorgeous day. I hope you're working outside. I hope you're walking. Mm-hmm. I hope you're exercising. You know, just be real about it.
Yeah. And we called it, we had 1 day, we were 4 days in the office pre-COVID, and we always had one day, Thursdays. We called it Work Remote Thursdays. And what I told everybody was, it's not work from home. Experience Austin. Go plug in at a coffee shop, you know, or you know, go to Mozart's and sit outside and work the afternoon, right? We just wanted them to experience and be outside or in an environment other than their homes, mm-hmm. right? Just plug in for the afternoon. And then that might be more focused on research that day,
right?
And whatever it might be. But you're right. It creates different ways for time management
mm-hmm.
in a lot of ways. So
yeah. Now, what do you guys see? Because this kind of can get controversial quickly. But if you look at, we'll make it less controversial. So look at a big company like Amazon. Can an Amazon have all A players?
No.
And when you say no, I mean, they can be an A maybe in their role, but like there's players that you can't, is there players that it wouldn't function well if they were told you've got to get to this point?
I think there's an A player in every function. It's just what people measure as the responsibility of that function. So a warehouse worker, there's an A
mm-hmm.
warehouse worker. But if you're trying to have that warehouse worker maybe run inventory, they might not be an A
right.
on inventory, yeah. right? And I think there's a book that called Top Grading, which I don't yeah. know if you're, and we teach a lot of those interview best practices. But you know, what Top Grading says, hey, look, you're an A player or a B player. A B player has the potential to become an A player.
Right.
Your C players, just get rid of them.
Yeah.
Because they can get to B's, right. but they can't get to A's.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah. And he's got the different yeah. questions that you're supposed to ask around that. I don't know if that's the right answer, but that's
no.
What I've seen.
I don't know if they're. It's a tricky question because then you take Tom Brady, you put him in. You're now the offensive guard. He'd be terrible. He'd
yeah.
be cut.
Yeah. But it's not his function.
But if you look at a team as well, I don't think there's a team that's ever been all pros. Does yeah. that make sense? If all pros, your line of A. Then there are, I'll call them B players on that team that wins the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And if you take a lot of times these dream teams that they put together, not just basketball, but these collective all-star teams, they get smoked by yeah. these other teams. There's yeah. other factors because the other team's been together longer, but it's always interesting.
Well, but you can take, you know, the pro in NFL, the Pro Bowlers, yeah. right? They're all A players at their position. And again, it's more exhibition. They don't practice nearly right. as much. But the dream team stories and in basketball, man, those teams before everybody figured them out, they were cleaning up.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And those yeah. are A players in every function.
To me, what separates A players is how much it means to them. And it's hard to get in an organization, especially beyond maybe like 10, 20 people, where everyone who's working there, it means so much to them.
Mm.
And so that, to me, that's the difference. Because yeah. if it means a lot to you, you're going to go that extra distance. And I kind of got that concept when I, going back to my Houston Texans days, Gary Kubiak would talk about the players that he cared about the most, that he loved the most. The biggest compliment he could give them was like, football means a lot to that player. And what he wasn't saying but was implied is that that player is doing this because football matters mm-hmm. to him. Versus players who maybe are doing it because of the things that football can buy that person. And that always resonated with me.
In our world, I've had clients tell me after an interview, what'd you think of that candidate? And they tell me, well, he's a solid B player. That doesn't mean they're going to hire him. You know, I've never had a client say, I'm going to hire us. The feedback can be, he's a solid B player, but they're not going to come back and say, I'm going to put an offer out to him. Right? They're waiting for... that A. But again, maybe it's about what makes up that A player.
Mm-hmm.
What's the definition of that A player?
Yeah.
I think in a lot of ways. So
I had a question about just your business. I saw Facebook made an announcement not too long ago that creators can now charge people to access their live streams on Facebook. I'd love to hear about some of the innovations you're making with your business. And is that something that you would ever consider in terms of giving talks on Facebook Live and putting it behind a paywall?
I mean, we're always willing to test different things. And so it's interesting because later today, I'm going to go down to the University of Texas and they have the first ever influencer class. So I'll be giving a lecture down there with a professor friend of mine, but it's their first ever influencer class. This isn't how to become an influencer. It's actually the other side of the coin. As a brand, how do you hire influencers? Mm. And I'm sure they'll have a course next semester that's how to become an influencer. So they have both. But it's been an interesting thing. It's influencers have always been there. I remember this is funny because I grew up in Detroit. So I worked at Cadillac, and so we were doing a Cadillac commercial. We had Sidney Crawford in one ad, and then we had Barry Sanders, the running back for the Lions, at another ad. And so we had to pay Sidney Crawford at the time a lot of money. We had to pay her $500,000 to be in that commercial. And then Barry's like, oh, if you give me a free Cadillac, I'm good. But Barry was awesome because he just mowed his own lawn. That's a whole other podcast. We can talk about how awesome Barry Sanders is. But
we can dedicate the whole podcast.
Just being a great human being. He's like cutting his lawn. He's coming to watch me play tennis, our tennis team in high school. Just a great dude. But anyways, influence has always been there. It's just a different model on what it looks like today. And so I've been on the both sides of the influencer game, and recently like I've done some stuff with like Sleep Number and Samsung, and it's great for everybody. And so yeah, whenever there's a new tool, we usually look at it, and if we have the bandwidth, we'll test it because it might be the next thing. Yeah. But it's really about just getting out there, testing, failing fast, failing forward, failing better.
Yeah, you see a lot of journalists now who maybe they're getting laid off by their newspapers and they're starting Patreon accounts or Substack accounts and just going direct to consumer and getting subscription payments through those services. And it's kind of an interesting trend. And I wonder if people are going to start getting their news less so from newspapers and more so from like individual reporters that they have affinity toward. I don't know.
Create a lot of op-ed opportunities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you on TikTok?
We're on TikTok. We're on there.
Okay.
That's good. Someone
some good personal videos. You got any dance videos on there?
We're doing some dad jokes to start. Okay. We're testing stuff. And one thing that hit was in March, because we have some animators, I go, you know, there's not a good moving graph of the coronavirus. And so that'd be helpful for me to see it. Like always asking, how can we help? So when it gets back to focus, whenever you don't know what to do, always ask, how can we help? And so we go, well, as animators, what can we do? Okay, we can do that. Okay, we can figure it out. All right, so we figured it out. And then I bring this up because someone on TikTok like reposted it on TikTok and I got 20 million views. So like, whoa, the organic reach on LinkedIn and TikTok are massive right now. They're really everything else you have to pay to play. But LinkedIn and TikTok still have massive organic, and organic just meaning free reach. You don't have to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you seeing TikTok, you know, obviously we've seen the craze from a social standpoint. Is there a professional business related opportunity there?
Yeah. I mean, for what we do, it's just for the younger generation, getting exposure to that younger generation. Think about 20 million views. That's crazy. And some of the other stuff we're posting, some of it gets like zero.
Right.
And so you're just testing to see what works, but it's really a better mousetrap. So it's not anything revolutionary. It's just a better version of an Instagram, which is a better version of Facebook, which is a better version of MySpace. It's not revolutionary, these items. They're more evolutionary. The algorithm's really good, so I always limit myself to 15 minutes.
Well, and then generations define it, right? Yeah. We were at our holiday party last December. That's when I first found out about TikTok. One of our millennials was like, oh, you're not on TikTok? I'm like, I don't know TikTok. What's TikTok? I got the app and I was on TikTok, ever since our holiday party. But there's certain people that have never been on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and it follows these sort of generational divides in a lot of ways.
Okay,
I'll tell you that.
I might need to give TikTok another chance. I had it. I downloaded. I checked it out, and it started serving me all these dance videos of girls in their 20s and younger. And I was like, this kind of seems creepy. I'm gonna uninstall it. And then I started hearing about the privacy concerns with China, and so I uninstalled it. But I've heard enough good things on the other side of the coin that it's probably worth another shot.
Let's talk a bit about AI. We do quite a bit of work in artificial intelligence, and you mentioned this earlier in the podcast on touch lists and things that we're seeing out there. Going forward, most of these organizations are going to be incorporating some type of AI in their business. This isn't really COVID related. This has been a thing for a while. Anything you're seeing out there with some of the companies that you've worked with, or any innovations around AI that you're seeing out there?
It's funny because one of the top questions I get is, what do I see like breaking through?
Yeah.
Coming through. And I go, it's the marriage of artificial intelligence with the gig economy, meaning Uber,
totally.
Instacart. Because I want to, on Alexa, go, Alexa, I want you to go get the same groceries I got last week. Just have them delivered in an hour. And I want you to look for any coupons that you can and apply those coupons. And that's it. It's saving me a hassle. And so anyone that can figure out that, they marry that AI with the gig economy, I think that's what we're going to see play out here in the next couple of years at a massive level.
Yeah.
Artificial intelligence, some unique things you can see, like lawyers, I love that they repurpose Watson. So they used to have a paralegal that has to spend all these hours, and they bill the hours to the client. But now 80% of it's boilerplate. The artificial intelligence can go read like this 30-page contract and just get the 20% that the lawyer needs to look at. Like, this is boilerplate.
Does that save the client's
money? It saves the lawyer. It saves the paralegal time that they'd pay that paralegal. So it saves the lawyer time. So it depends on that lawyer if they want to transfer that savings to the client.
Yeah.
Good lawyers would, because it's a fully transparent society. And so bad lawyers don't. And so it's really just understanding that that's a huge saving. It's getting rid of like a lot of waste when you think about that time. So that's some of the cool stuff. You can see artificial intelligence looking at an aerial drone that's looking for cracks in a pipeline where you'd have to manually look for that.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of cool stuff that's happening.
We have a client here in town that we've worked with called SkyGrid. Mm-hmm. They are mapping the sky for when for drone activity. So so making sure that drones aren't running into each other. So they're taking, you know, their dev center is a bunch of gamers, right? They hire guys that have gaming experience, and they're saying, okay, look, your job now is to help us map out the sky. So when drones are flying everywhere, they have different routes that they're not following. It's a division of Spark Cognition here in town, which is another company we've done some work with. So I think predictive analytics, right? Anything, mm-hmm. you mentioned Amazon, but how smart AI is going to get around making these types of predictions where, as consumers, whether personally or professionally, we get what we want before we know we want it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? And that's like the toilet paper arriving at your door. You're right. Like, oh, I do need toilet paper.
Yeah.
You know, it's like or when you get you'll start getting like Eric will get a gray shirt. It's like, I don't need a gray shirt, but it's a gray shirt, so I'll take it, right? Yep. But the concept of returning will be so easy. So if you don't want it, return it. But we think you want it, and you're going to get it, and you just keep it.
Recommendation engines are really fascinating to me now, and they've improved a lot. I mean, I'm just thinking about my Netflix profile and what Netflix is serving me. It's so much better than it was even a year ago. They're learning a lot about me, which I don't know if I should be scared about or not, but as long as they keep it on Netflix, that's fine.
Yeah, and all this stuff is slow until it's fast, meaning that it takes a lot longer than people think. So Amazon's been practicing for 10 years, just here's your stuff. Mm-hmm. And so then it's coming. And so it's slow, slow, slow. People think it's overnight. It's not. It's like, no pun intended. It's slow, slow, slow. Then boom, all of a sudden it hits, right? Mm-hmm. And then it just takes over the world.
Well, I saw something that there are these voiceover companies now that can take like a 10-second snippet of your voice and then create a synthetic voice based on that sample. And so imagine that you hear your voice saying something, and you're like, wait, I didn't say that, but it's just a snippet of your voice that someone took to create a synthetic voice. That is one of those things, talking about it goes slow until it goes fast. That's like, wait. That's like going too far, right? Mm-hmm. And these companies on their website, they have boilerplates saying that we follow these ethical guidelines, right? But, you know, you're putting a lot of trust in them. Right.
Yeah, that's Skynet Terminator technology right there. Hey, I've got sort of a wrap-up question. I know we're nearing the end of this, but talk to me about spirit animals. I got that from your book, and another thing that really resonated with me, because I'll tell you mine in a second, but I think you mentioned you're the army ant.
I'm an army ant, yes.
Okay.
And so there's four spirit animals when it comes to focus. And when I say these four, you have a tendency of all four of them, but there's really one that you major in and probably one that you minor in. And so the army ant is the person that goes, they take on basically more than they should. An army ant can carry 5,000 times their weight, but that doesn't mean they should.
Yeah.
Meaning they get back to the anthill and it's a problem because they can't get it all in the anthill. And what that looks like from our perspective is that you're doing five projects parallel processed. And so in net, it takes you longer to do those five, where if you took them and broke them down one at a time, like a Swiss cheese approach, like punching holes in that Swiss cheese, you'd be much better off, both from a health perspective, the project would be better, and it'd be done faster. So rather than parallel processing like an army ant, you should just focus on one thing at a time. Then there's the squirrel. That's the FOMO, fear of missing out, that they're really good at innovation, but and they're really good at sales often. But what they do is they want to move on to the next shiny object. And so everything looks good to them, so they want to move on. They don't want to complete the project that they're on. They want to kind of go and...
And I'm raising my hand right now.
Yeah.
I know what I am.
Yeah. The squirrel.
Yeah.
Shiny.
I know exactly what I am.
It's good. I like it.
And then complete lack of focus. Keep going. Sorry.
No, it's good. And then there's my daughter's favorite animal is a hedgehog. But a hedgehog, they will curl up, so they're defensive by nature. And so what that looks like from a focus perspective is that you go, I want to write a movie, but I need to get a degree, a PhD in screenplay writing. And that's what a hedgehog looks like. They want to, before they get in the arena, and we're in the office right now, it's got the Teddy Roosevelt Man in the Arena speech. Before they get into that arena, they want to have all this armor on, when that armor can actually weigh you down. So hedgehogs, that's what their thing is, and they're procrastinators, or sometimes precrastination. So that's a term I wasn't aware of until we went in this project. Precrastination is that to not do the thing you should be doing, you procrastinate. You start doing your email when you should be doing the one thing from the huddle that you guys had in the morning. And so that's what a hedgehog looks like. Then the chameleon, what they do, and the chameleon, what, and all these are like positive things. When you look in the book, I go more in depth on why you would be this animal, that a lot of them have positive things, like your greatest strengths, your greatest weakness. But the chameleon, they're a very people pleaser. And normally that serves them well. They're looking out for other people. And so they might say, I don't love this job, but I'm in it because I'm going to provide health care for my kids. And so the chameleon adapts to what they think is the right thing for society or the right thing for everyone else. Or I'm going to be a lawyer because my parents would be so proud of me if I was a lawyer. And so that's what the chameleon looks like when it comes to focus. And all of us struggle. You got to know what your spirit animal is to know what that weakness is when it comes to focus. Meaning, why aren't I hitting that summit? Why aren't I getting to that next summit in life? I'm doing very well, but I'm not crushing it. Like, I know that I could hit that grand slam instead of just this triple. And so that's why we go over those spirit animals. It sounds like we've got a squirrel here, so I'd love to know what we have in the room.
Man, I can see myself in a little bit in each of them, but probably the army ant is number one, probably most predisposed to that one.
Now, can you be promoted to another spirit animal? Or if you're a spirit animal, they're all level playing fields.
I do see people take it. I go, I wish I was an army ant because it sounds like, yeah, I'll take everything on. Like, cool. I'm the man. Like, what's your greatest weakness? Well, I take on too much stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But that's a big problem, and it's a huge problem. You shouldn't take on all this stuff. But yeah, I think that over time, your core is not going to change, and that gets into research that's well beyond my my educational level. But it's really about, okay, you're going to major in one and minor in another, and it might morph over time, but you are what you are.
Yeah. I mean, when I train salespeople, not just in our organization, other organizations, and I know I have a high need for approval, which is the one thing that you don't want salespeople to have. Again, it kind of goes back to saying no, right? Yeah. Really good salespeople know how to say no. My problem is I say yes. So I've had self-realization over the years, knowing that I have a high need for approval and being aware of it when I'm in the situation, right? And that's one thing, because a lot of salespeople are that way. But if they're not aware of it, it becomes a problem. But if you can create some awareness around it, then you can, I don't know if overcome's the right word, but you can cope with it.
You can make it not a liability.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's not going to be your strength, and nor should you go down that role. Just like sports is always great because it's a great analogy.
Yeah.
To where it's like, okay, you're a three-point shooter. You are not going to be defensive player of the year, but you've got to make it so you're not a liability so we can actually have you on the court, that you're net positive. And so that's go to your strength. I want you shooting those, you know, that's where you should spend your time. But it's really just make that weakness, your defense, just make it not a liability that we can have you on the floor. That's a net positive.
Yep.
Yeah. And then you get somebody else to play the defense, right?
We start off with sports. Before we started the interview, I asked you if you still play pickup ball. You said you retired from basketball. So what do you do these days to stay active?
Yeah, chase the kids, which is good. That's been great during the pandemic is outdoor swimming. Has been awesome. Tennis, got back into tennis, which I talk about in the book, just to kind of have some social aspect as well to that sports. But those are the main things.
Yeah.
The gym, it's crazy because since I was 18, I would literally I would go look, because I was always a scrawny kid, and for college basketball, you had to like put on weight. And so,
especially an Izzo team.
Yeah, Izzo team. Like, yeah. You got to bang. Come on. And then so it's like, it's crazy to think about, for 6 months, I didn't go to a gym, where since the age of 18, I was definitely in the gym at least 4 or 5 days a week. So mm-hmm. that was an adjustment, but it's been great to be outdoors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Well, I'll tell you, this has been a lot of fun having you on, and I know you won't plug it, so I'll do it for you, but, get a copy of this book. For me, it's a game changer. And, I'm not just saying that because you and I are friends. It's something that I've struggled with for a long time. So, equalman.com, you can also get it on Amazon. The Focus Project. It's a great, great book. Eric, thanks for being on today.
Honor to be here. Lots of laughs. Love it.
The leaders that have had the most transparency over time, they're the ones that you remember.
In times like these, adverse economic times, employees don't want to hear happy talk.
Work every day like somebody's trying to take it from you, because they are.
So thanks again for listening to today's Super You podcast. Again, it's a podcast designed to unlock and unleash your inner superpower. And if you want to pay it forward, make sure you go post a review for the Super You podcast, because what that will do, it'll allow others that aren't familiar with our podcast to discover it. And hopefully that allows them to unlock and unleash their inner superpower. So that's it for today's show. I'm your host, Equal Man, reminding all of us, it's not what we take from the world, it is what we leave behind.
7.
6.
5.
4. 3.
2.
1.
Super, 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 super.
Super You.